The following program is pre-recorded.
Fasten your seatbelts and turn up your radio. We're going on a road trip. The November election is less than 2 months away, when voters nationwide will choose the next president of the United States. In north central Wisconsin, there's much more at stake, with dozens of seats in the state legislature up for grabs. Members of the state Senate and Assembly make crucial decisions that have an enormous impact on our everyday lives, from how much tax we pay on our morning cup of coffee to how our roads and schools are funded, our choices in health care, and much more. The decisions they make can affect our state's policies for years to come. Welcome to Route 51. I'm Shereen Seewert. As part of our mission to offer balanced election coverage, we invited candidates for key races in North Central Wisconsin to spend some time with us, answering seven identical questions about their background, their ideas, and their top priorities in representing your interests in Madison. This week is the second in our series of candidate conversations, all of which aim to help you make an informed choice this November when heading to the polls. Last week, we heard from candidates in Wisconsin's 71st Assembly and 14th Senate districts. Those interviews, along with a discussion on recent polling in the state, can be heard at wpr.org/route51. But today we welcome a new set of candidates to the program. Because each interview was recorded earlier, we won't be taking your calls or emails today. First, we'll hear from the candidates for Wisconsin's 24th Senate District, starting with Democrat Paul Petruski and incumbent Republican Patrick Teston. Then we'll take a look at the race for Wisconsin's 85th Assembly District with incumbent Republican Patrick Snyder and his challenger, Democrat Jeff Johnson. Joining us now on Route 51 is Republican Patrick Teston from Stevens Point, the incumbent senator for Wisconsin's 24th District. Senator Teston is being challenged by Democrat Paul Petruski for the seat. Senator Teston, thank you for joining us today.
Great to be on. Thanks for having me.
So let's start off by asking you to tell us a little bit about yourself and your background and why you chose to run for office.
Well, sure. So I grew up in Marinette, Wisconsin, which is an hour north of Green Bay, right on the Wisconsin-UT border, and graduated high school in 2006 and then went to school at the University of Wisconsin-Stevens Point, where I majored in political science. And that was there where I really got my interest and involvement within the political realm, where I got involved with the College of Republicans, student government, and then found myself in 2010 working as a field staffer for Sean Duffy's first congressional race. And after I graduated college, I transitioned into a career in sales. And for the last several years, I've worked for a wine distribution company called M. Shiraz, based out of Saukville, that I still do part-time on the side. But in 2016, I decided to run for the state Senate. And for 11 months, I spent my free time going door-to-door, talking to people throughout every corner of the 24th Senate District. And it wasn't just so much about me showing up at their door and saying, hey, vote for me. It was, what's working down in Madison, what isn't, and how can I be a better voice for you down in Madison? I think that was a message that resonated with people, and as a result, we surprised a lot of folks in the state when we flipped this seat. So it's been a great privilege for the last 4 years to serve the people of the 24th Senate District, and I hope I have the privilege and opportunity to serve for another 4 years.
Certainly COVID-19 and the government's response to it are at the top of everyone's mind. How do you feel about the job the legislature and the governor have done? And what changes, if any, would you like to see to the state's COVID-19 response?
So certainly COVID-19 has upended our way of life here in the state and around the country. I mean, just a few months ago, we had one of the strongest economies that the state has ever seen. And in fact, the biggest challenges that we faced a few months ago was that we had more jobs than there were workers available, and now that's certainly not the case anymore, as many small businesses have boarded up for good. You know, I would say in the response to the actions taken by the legislature, we moved as quickly as possible back in April to pass the COVID relief bill, which leveraged roughly $2 billion that came down from the CARES Act that essentially gave the governor's administration a lot of leeway to allocate resources to areas of the state finances, our state's economy, to help alleviate some of those concerns. I think moving forward, as we take a look at next steps, we certainly have to be aware and make sure that we're doing everything that we can to help those individuals who are still dealing with unemployment backlogs and who haven't received paychecks upwards of going on 20 weeks now, that we want to make sure that those individuals have the resources that they need to get back on their feet. And then anything that needs to be done to help our business community, K-12 education, as I relate to my leadership in the state Senate, we need to remain as flexible and nimble as possible to address any needs that arise to the people of the state.
The pandemic has resulted in unprecedented economic challenges, lost revenue that will have a significant impact on the state's budget. The latest projections show the revenue shortfall could have serious implications on state aid for schools and infrastructure. So how do you propose to deal with the projected state budget shortfall? It's such a change from what you had over the last few years.
Yeah, it's certainly going to be a challenge. If you remember, just earlier this year, we were looking at over an $800 million surplus going into this next biennium. And because of the economic shutdown and the economic downturn in response to COVID-19, we are going to face significant budget challenges moving into the next biennium. And so we are going to have to make some very tough choices, but that's why it's equally important that we open up our economy as safely and as quickly as possible, so hopefully we can lessen that economic downturn and have that V-shaped recovery in Q3 and Q4. So my hope is that we do whatever needs to be done to get our economy back up and running, so hopefully the tough choices that we have to make in the next session aren't as severe.
You touched on the struggles that small businesses are having a little bit, but certainly small businesses and farmers have been especially hard hit by the pandemic and economic downturn. So what can the state best do to help those that are struggling, especially farmers? I mean, we're seeing these record bankruptcies and some very real struggles.
Our ag industry has certainly had to weather some very turbulent times these last several years. And as you've referenced, we've seen a record number of bankruptcies, especially with our small dairy farmers. So it's important to note, too, that under the Evers administration, from the money that was leveraged from the CARES Act, that direct cash payments have been made to a number of farmers throughout the state. And while it certainly won't make them whole, it does provide a lifeline to keep them afloat to hopefully weather the storm. Moving forward, that's why we need to continue to explore any and all options to open up more markets and opportunities for our ag industry, whether it's things like, you know, the hemp industry, making sure that we continue to provide more opportunities on that front, the Dairy Innovation Hub that we had passed in this last budget, and making sure that we're putting our best foot forward to support our farmers who not only just feed Wisconsinites, but feed our entire country and the world.
And the situation with farmers has been ongoing for some time. I mean, they've already been hit and struggling. So this is just compounding things. Do you see this as more of a federal solution or a state solution that's going to help?
I think it's both. I think we have to work with all of our partners at the federal and the state level, and even to some extent at the local level, providing any options available to help farmers, whether it's dealing with ag livestock setting rules, whether it's our regulatory systems here at the state level and then also at the federal level. So, I mean, it's a collaborative effort. We have to put our best foot forward to ensure that we're helping the men and women who bust their backs every single day, because farming is not a 9-to-5 job. It is literally 7 days a week, 24 hours a day that, you know, they're taking care of their operations, making sure that their dairy cows are being milked twice a day. So it's a rigorous job. And that's why I'm really proud of some of the work that we have worked on the last couple legislative sessions, whether it was the Vets and Ag program to help veterans transition to agriculture, because there have been countless studies that have shown that it's a natural fit for them and can help them deal with issues like PTSD and things of that nature, whether it's, you know, introducing new products in the marketplace. You take a look at the hemp bill that we had authored. And then, as I had referenced already, the Dairy Innovation Hub. I mean, these are all things that are going to help provide more opportunities for our farmers.
What would you say are your top two priorities in representing the district in Madison?
Yeah, I would say right now the top two biggest priorities is obviously health care. Chair of the Senate Health and Human Services Committee, doing everything that we can to increase access to quality and affordable health care. And then, as you also referenced and as we touched on, is making sure that we're supporting our farmers and that we continue to strike that balance between making sure that we have a thriving egg community, but we're also making sure that we're being good stewards of our natural resources. That was one of the primary reasons why this past session, when the speaker announced he was going to form a task force on water quality, that I had approached Speaker Voss and said, Speaker, this is a great idea, but let's make sure the Senate's involved. So we are working in a bicameral fashion to address the needs of those individuals who can't go to their tap right now and know that they have safe, clean water. So proud of those efforts that we've worked on. There's still much more work that needs to be done, and that's why I'm hoping to have another 4 years in Madison to continue to advocate and support the people of the 24th Senate District.
In 2016, the rural areas of Wisconsin voted overwhelmingly for Donald Trump, but in the same election, medium to large metropolitan areas went decisively the other way. How do you propose to address the concerns of voters in both areas without disenfranchising either one?
It's really about being out there and making sure that individuals' voices are heard. That's why we've been going out through communities, even in the midst of COVID-19 and this pandemic, to hear what's on people's minds and to get their feedback. Obviously, we you're not always going to win everyone over, but that's the nature of life in politics and in today's polarized environment. But even for those individuals who may not support me, may not vote for me, I want them to know that I'm going to listen. And just as we've done the last 4 years, we're going to go out there and make sure people have every opportunity to make sure that their voices are heard. And we're going to take their feedback. And whether or not we come to an agreement, or even if we come to agree to disagree, I'm going to listen with my ears wide open.
We've got about 2 minutes left, and I'd like to ask you now if there's anything that you'd like to talk about that we haven't brought up, anything that your campaign is focusing on or that you'd like voters to know about you before the election.
You know, I think the big thing right now is really trying to cut through all the noise and commotion that's going on in this world. You know, it's obviously 2020. It is a critical election year. It's very, very partisan. It's very divisive. And we're trying to cut through the noise and continue to focus on delivering results for the people of the 24th Senate District, whether it's the issues that we've already discussed. You know, the other big issue that we've been dealing with over the last several weeks is the Verso mill situation, in which we've the Rapids paper mill, for the first time in its history, there's no smoke coming out of smokestacks. And it's unfortunate because this is a mill that has survived two world wars, a Great Depression, countless economic downturns, but they always kept their doors open. And so we have been working with a bipartisan task force with stakeholders from the federal, state, local level, community leaders to really be a resource for those nearly 900 families that have impacted, and also working with the governor's administration to find solutions for new buyers. So that's really been the bulk of everything that we've been trying to focus on is, you know, let's turn down the noise, let's focus on the people and try and get results for this district.
You're listening to special election coverage with Republican Patrick Teston, the incumbent senator for Wisconsin's 24th district. Senator Teston is being challenged by Democrat Paul Petrosky for the seat. Senator Teston, thank you so much for being here today. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Coming up next, we'll hear from Paul Petrosky as our special election coverage continues. I'm Shereen Seward. This is Route 51 on Wisconsin Public Radio. Joining us now on Route 51 is Paul Petrosky, the Democrat challenging incumbent Pat Teston for Wisconsin's 24th Senate seat. Mr. Petrosky, thank you for being here today.
Thank you for having me as a guest.
So let's start off by having you tell us about yourself. What's your background and why are you running?
I'm born and raised in Stevens Point, graduated from both high school and UW-Stevens Point. After graduating from the university, I went into the Navy via Naval Officer Candidate School, served several years on active duty, returned to the area, was hired by the Stevens Point Police Department, and served there for just under 27 years. And then subsequent to that, our city clerk resigned 2 months before the midterm elections in 2018, and I had been a poll worker and chief election inspector, and some of the licensing functions of the clerk's office came through my position at the police department. So I stepped up and served as the city clerk for Stevens Point from October of 2018 until this January when I made the decision to run for the state Senate. Why I'm running, specifically the three issues that popped into my mind right away when I first started to consider running was health care, especially Wisconsin's one of only 12 states that has not yet accepted Medicaid expansion under the Affordable Care Act, and that would allow 80,000 Wisconsinites who are working poor. They earn enough money where they don't qualify for Badger Care currently, but they don't earn enough money to buy health insurance on their own. Would allow them to get health insurance at a reasonable cost. Secondly, in this area of Wisconsin with the Central Sands region, we've had an issue with water quality for many years, and especially nitrate contamination, and every family deserves access to safe, healthy drinking water. And then third is somebody who's worked elections for more than 20 years. Voters deserve, anybody who's eligible to vote should be able to register, vote, and have their vote counted and be able to do so with the least amount of interference possible.
Well, you made the decision to run back in January, you said, and since then, things have changed quite a bit. COVID-19 and the government's response to it, they're really at the top of everyone's mind. So how do you feel about the job the legislature and the governor have done so far? And what changes, if any, would you like to see to the state's COVID-19 response?
We need a coordinated plan, and we need the legislature to work with the governor to come up with that plan. I was very disappointed that the legislature, instead of sitting down with the governor, sued, and that the governor's safer at home orders were thrown out by the Supreme Court, the state Supreme Court, without any plan to substitute for that. We've seen the effects of throwing the gates open. We had a huge spike in Wisconsin, and a number of people gotten sick and passed away because of the lack of a response. And we need a coordinated response on a statewide level, and the legislature's not been willing to sit down with the governor to come up with one, which is unfortunate on behalf of everybody in the state of Wisconsin. I think we'd be much further along, and people would be much more comfortable with sending their children back to school if we had a coordinated plan.
Well, the pandemic has resulted in some pretty significant challenges, lost revenue that will have a significant impact on the state's budget. The latest projections show the revenue shortfall could have serious implications on state aid for schools and for infrastructure, for example. So if elected, how do you propose to deal with those state budget shortfalls that we're expecting?
I believe that the state legislature and state leaders need to push our federal representatives to come up with a federal plan to backstop state and local budgets at this point. Without that, we are going to be facing critical budget shortfalls, and the investments that we need to make for the future are going to be difficult to make. And right now, we're not at the end of the pandemic. We are maybe in the middle of it, and we do not know the full extent of what those shortfalls are going to be. So we need to prioritize what we want to invest in for the future. I believe education is one of those things. If we shortchange our children now, they're going to be paying that for the rest of their lives. So we need to push our federal government to come up with a plan to help state and local governments fund those critical necessary services, first responders, education. And then we need to prioritize those things that we view as long-term investments, and education and infrastructure are amongst those that are very important to the future of the state of Wisconsin.
Small businesses and farmers have been especially hard hit by the pandemic and the economic downturn. How can the state best help those struggling to recover at this time?
Our legislators and the state leaders and the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation specifically need to sit down with small business owners and hear from them what they need to get through this very difficult time. I encourage every person in Wisconsin to support their local businesses as much as possible through this period. It's going to be difficult on everybody. And everybody's having issues with working full-time and not getting the money that they normally would. But if you want to do the best for your community, make sure that you're supporting local businesses as much as possible at this point in time.
And what about the farmers? I mean, we've seen record bankruptcies. What do you think the state could do to help farmers?
Well, farmers got a kind of a double whammy here with COVID-19 and the effect of tariffs that were put in place, and driving down farm prices temporarily, and then long-term, and now demand has been reduced because of COVID-19. So the federal government did step in with price support about halfway through, and some of them, especially milk prices, rebounded. Unfortunately, a number of farmers had already locked themselves into contracts for their for their milk prices and are getting below market value because of those contracts. But we need to focus on small family farms. Corporate farmers got most of the subsidies that have been provided at this point, so we need to take a look at what we can do for those family farmers who don't have hundreds of heads of cattle. They have less than 100, and they're the ones who are seeing the most significant impact of both COVID-19 and those tariffs.
So what are your top two priorities in representing the district in Madison?
First, health care. We have an issue with making sure that everybody can have access to affordable health care. And one of the ways to do that is accepting Medicaid expansion. Another part of accepting Medicaid expansion is allowing state Medicaid reimbursement rates to rise. Wisconsin's are amongst the lowest in the nation, which is part of the problem with rural health care providers. They lose money on Medicaid patients, and a lot of rural medical providers have shrunk or gone out of business entirely, forcing rural people to travel longer distances. So health care is the biggest issue. And then for me, as somebody who's worked elections, we're going to be facing redistricting next year after the census and making sure that those districts are drawn in a manner that are fair and take into account voters' wishes and not just politicians' wishes on who's going to be voting for them.
In 2016, the rural areas of Wisconsin voted overwhelmingly for Donald Trump, and in the same election, medium to large metropolitan areas went decisively the other way. So how do you propose to address the concerns of voters in both areas without disenfranchising either one?
I believe that voters in both rural areas and more urban areas actually have a lot more in common. We tend to drive them apart as much as possible, talk about them as differently. But everybody wants to be able to earn enough to support their family, provide health care, and have a decent education for their children to build for the future. Those are the priorities that we need to focus on and unite all of us in making sure that our future generations have a fair shot at the American dream.
And one final question for you. Is there anything we haven't brought up that you'd like to discuss that your campaign is focusing on?
As somebody who's got more than 30 years of public service and a number of levels with federal and local, my focus has always been on serving the people of my community. And my hope is to follow up with that in the state legislature. People know me. I was on Crime Stoppers for 7 years with the Stevens Point Police Department. People know my faith, and people who know me know that my commitment to the people of this area. So I'm hoping that that comes through and that the people who have seen me and know me would trust me enough to entrust serving as their state senator for the next 4 years.
You're listening to Special Election Coverage with Paul Petrusky, the Democrat challenging incumbent Pat Teston for Wisconsin's 24th Senate seat. Mr. Petrusky, thank you for being here today.
Thank you for the time.
Coming up next, we'll hear from candidates in the race for Wisconsin's 85th Assembly District, incumbent Republican Patrick Snyder and Democrat Jeff Johnson, part of our Special Election Coverage. I'm Shereen Seewert. This is Route 51 on Wisconsin Public Radio. Joining us now on Route 51 is Republican Pat Snyder of Schofield, who represents Wisconsin's 85th Assembly District and is being challenged in this election by Democratic candidate Jeff Johnson. Thank you for joining us, Pat.
Well, Shereen, it's always a pleasure to talk to you. Thanks for the invitation.
You bet. Let's start out by just having you tell us about yourself. Where are you from? What's your background? And why did you run for office in the first place?
Well, I am actually born in Iowa, but when I was just 3 years old, my parents moved into Milwaukee. So I grew up in the northwest side of Milwaukee and went to college out in the state of Iowa, where I met my wife. I came out with a bachelor's degree with communications and public relations and ended up in a career of radio, which I spent 34 years in. I always wanted to get back to Wisconsin, and in November of 2000, I was fortunate enough to be able to host the morning show at WSAU, which I did until 2012. I decided to, instead of talking about politics on the radio, to actually maybe get involved, and I did that in 2012, but fell short. And luckily, though, I was able to join Congressman Sean Duffy's staff as outreach director, And that really helped me kind of transition from broadcast side on the politics to more of what it takes to create legislation and to listen and to be able to actually make things that help people. And those years with him helped me transition when the opportunity came in 2016. I think the motivation was for me is I wanted to make an impact for not only the 85th district, but also for the state of Wisconsin, and especially when it came to one of my priority areas, and that is children. I just think so much of what we're facing today economically, educationally, the criminal justice system, all can be somehow affected by our ability to go into a child's life from birth to sixth, making sure they have a stable, happy, healthy environment, helping families that might be in stress, but also if they aren't, to be able to try to get that child into a stable environment. Because I just think if they come into that time knowing they're loved and feel safe, that their lives in the future will be able to move forward successfully. So that's why I've kind of really dedicated myself to trying to get the impact in this birth to 6 years old, because so much of what happens to adults really stems on what happened to them from birth to six. And when I led the foster care task force, I learned what happens when these young individuals do have a traumatic environment and are scarred by that. And so when they leave foster care, aren't adopted, a lot of times it leads to homelessness, sometimes to incarceration, and I just want to be able to make a difference there. So, but in the same sense, that there was other things that I wanted to be able to make sure that the 85th district had, and worked forward with the education. The last couple of sessions we had, big. I guess that might get into more questions, but it really is, for me, it's about the people. And I'm old enough knowing that I'm going to be here for a while trying to make a difference, but I'm not going to make this a career.
Well, COVID-19 and the government's response to it are at the top of everyone's mind these days. How do you feel about the job the legislature and the governor have done? And what changes, if any, would you like to see to the state's COVID-19 response?
Well, I think that, when the beginning came in March, and it was such new, and we didn't know exactly what was happening. When the governor came out with his 60-day stay-at-home order, we came along with that response and said, okay, the governor has all the rights in the world to declare emergency, and the 60 days came through. But in that same sense, we really weren't prepared as a state by shutting down businesses to help the individuals that need the unemployment insurance. If we're going to take their jobs away by shutting things down, we have to be prepared to be able to get them their unemployment benefits and make sure that they still have money to put food on the table. And really, we as a state dropped the ball on that. I'm still working on that. I think if there is one thing that we can look at for the future is how we can more effectively and quickly get these funds out to these people. I know that one of the areas after June 1st came and the emergency was pretty much over with, one of the areas that I was concerned about were the food share program. I had a single mom come to me that was getting over $300 a month during the emergency for food share, after the emergency, it was cut to $16. Well, you can't hardly go out to McDonald's for two for $16. You'd have a little change left. And I was trying to go to the governor's office to see if he could use some of the COVID money to recharge some of the food share for single parents that might be in need of that. But all we can do is suggest, because the governor had full authority on how the money was handled. But I think, it was so new, the PPE and some of the other stuff that we had to get, we can do a much better job at. I think that extending that order to the end of May, from the businesses I was hearing, and I mean overwhelmingly, that they said they had plans where they could open safely and everyone. So we just We just thought that was a little too much. But okay. I do think if there's anything, it would be the unemployment, because I still have cases that have been waiting 12, 14 weeks.
Okay. The pandemic certainly has resulted in economic challenges for the state. Lost revenue will have a significant impact on the state's budget, with the latest projections showing the revenue shortfall could have serious implications on state aid for schools and for infrastructure. So how do you propose to deal with the projected state budget shortfall?
Well, that's an excellent question, Shereen. We'll have a lot more knowledge by the time we get through to what happened in our third quarter and to see what happens in our fourth quarter when we go to the session and start working on the budget. I do think that because it is so lean, just like families when they look over their budgets and determine what will what they can afford, what they can't afford, do they take a family vacation this year because of situations, we as a state have to do the same thing. The priorities still have to be high up there, like we have followed through in this last session. Health care is important, and K through 12 education. We have to be able to make sure that we can meet their need, and so that'll be a priority. And transportation. Roads still need to be fixed. We still need to do this. You know, and I can say this. I was an advocate the last two sessions of the gas tax, of I consider it a user fee, to look at that for a way to bring up the income level for our DOT department to fix roads. But in the same sense, I want to make sure we go into this budget session meeting these priorities, but not raising taxes on people that have come out and are in hardships already. So that'll probably be some of the priorities I look at.
Small businesses and farmers have been especially hard hit by the pandemic and economic downturn. So how can the state best help those struggling to recover?
I think we will be able to offer some type of grant or loan programs to maybe help them reestablish some of their lost funding over these past months. I do think that we have to make sure that we keep any burdensome regulations and other things off the table. We can look at tax credits for both the farming community and the small businesses, and also encourage and promote the entrepreneurs that really, from this pandemic, maybe learned a new way to start a business and help them grow.
Earlier, you talked about one of your top priorities being children and the issues related to children. What's a second priority that you have in representing the district in Madison?
Well, the second, besides the children, I think, is to make sure that we can keep the taxes at a reasonable rate, keep them low, because when I'm at the doors talking with folks, the priorities are basically let's stay healthy from the COVID and let's get the economy back going. But in the same sense, except we don't want our taxes raised. So that's one area. I'm also being approached by the folks from the domestic violence situation. I was called by a university professor about legislation that would help certify counselors for people that have been charged with domestic abuse. Right now, there's really no certification, so someone can be a counselor and maybe a domestic abuse person be given off to someone who has maybe 8 hours of counseling that the judge gives to this person. So they want to look at legislation to be able to make it more standardized, more equal, that it helps make sure these people are actually helped and got through their issues, so they maybe can have a future, at least with if they have any children down the road. So that's
sure.
Important. It's nice being approached by that. So a lot of things, you know, it's good that we have three ADAs. I'd like to work on trying to get more ADAs for Teresa, and I'm glad we got another judge. So there's a lot of different things that I want to keep working on for the 85th.
In 2016, the rural areas of Wisconsin voted overwhelmingly for Donald Trump, but in the same election, medium to large metropolitan areas went decisively the other way. So how do you propose to address the concerns of voters in both areas without disenfranchising either one?
Well, my focus when I'm at the doors now, Shereen, is basically focused on the 85th and the state of Wisconsin. A lot of the things the federal government is we try to apply for funding on different areas from the federal government. But how people feel about the presidential pick really doesn't, you know, impact what I'm trying to do for them. So I just think that if they talk with me and understand that I am focused on them and this community and what we can do locally, I think that it doesn't get carried away into something that really doesn't impact on how I'm going to be representing them.
So final 30 seconds, anything we've brought up that we haven't brought up that you'd like to discuss that your campaign is focusing on?
Yes. I just think the one thing that I'm proud of is that I really work well across the aisle with my colleagues. And I'll just give you a note here that I received after we had a hearing in late July for the Department of Children and Families. It was an email I received that said, while this hearing undeniably deals with one of the most difficult and upsetting topics any of us could interact with, you have set such a respectful and professional tone in your leadership of the committee. This tone and the relationship between the members and the department make it feel safe to dig into some of the thinking we all want and need to truly improve the child welfare system. I truly appreciate your leadership and your solutions-oriented approach. That is from Emily Amundson, the director of Secretary of Children's and Family.
Thank you. You're listening to special election coverage with Republican Pat Snyder, who represents Wisconsin's 85th Assembly District. He's being challenged in this election by Democratic candidate Jeff Johnson. Pat, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Shireen.
Coming up next, we'll hear from Jeff Johnson as our special election coverage continues. I'm Shireen Seward. This is Route 51 on Wisconsin Public Radio. Joining us now on Route 51 is Jeff Johnson, a Democrat who is challenging Republican Pat Snyder for Wisconsin's 85th Assembly seat. Pat Snyder is the incumbent who currently represents the district. Mr. Johnson, thank you for being here today.
Yes, my pleasure, Shireen.
Well, let's start off by asking you to tell us about yourself. So what's your background and why are you running for office?
Well, sure. Let's go back to, let's start at the beginning. I'm the seventh of nine children born to a working class family. And I kind of learned early that if you wanted something extra, you kind of had to work for it. So I've been working pretty much since I was old enough to pick up a snow shovel or push a lawnmower. And even though I'm retired from my job in probation and parole, I'm still keeping busy, still working. But what inspired me to run is I hear so many from so many people, and quite frankly, I feel it as well, that our state government really isn't functioning very well. It's so contentious. It's so splintered into groups and splintered and so partisan that not a lot seems to be getting done that actually helps the people of Wisconsin. Now, I do have a history of involvement with other groups. I was a union, elected union official, and represented a pretty large local, about 3,200 people, as the chief steward and vice president. And I also served as the secretary of AFSCME Council 24, representing 25,000 state employees. And later became the chairman of the State Employees Political Action Committee. And that kind of got me involved in politics. But the focus has always stayed the same. And that is, what can we do to help the people we represent, whether it was in the union, representing the members, or at large now as a county board supervisor, representing the folks in the district and the city and the entire county of Marathon. So it's always about, for me, been about using whatever ability I have to help other people.
Well,
COVID-19
COVID-19 and the government's response to it are at the top of everyone's mind right now. So how do you feel about the job the legislature and the governor have done at this point? And what changes, if any, would you like to see to the state's COVID-19 response?
Sure. And I don't think we can talk about the COVID-19 response without starting at the top, at the federal level, where we've had a non-response, quite frankly. You know, the United States makes up 4% of the population of the world, yet we have more than 20% of the cases and 20% of the deaths. And unfortunately, the federal government, you know, starting in the White House, abdicated their responsibility and pushed it all down to the states. This has led to disastrous results. We're approaching or over 180,000 dead Americans from this virus. And it's not the flu. It's not a hoax. It's real, and it affects real people. And it's very disappointing that we didn't have a nationalized response. We could have been much more effective. There's no reason we have this many number of cases and this many people who have died from it. That being said, it was pushed down to the state. Governor Evers took action with the Safer at Home edict, which was then challenged in court and overturned, as you know, in May. And the doors were kind of flung open to business as usual with predictably poor results. Our positivity rate skyrocketed. The number of cases skyrocketed, and sadly, the number of deaths has skyrocketed. Fortunately, we're seeing a downtick now, and I think part of that can be attributed to the governor instituting the mask mandate statewide, which is just common sense. I don't understand the strong resistance to that. People didn't rebel against no shoes, no shirt, no service. They didn't rebel against seatbelts. This is a serious issue, and it's just common sense that masks help. They've been shown to help. It works in every other country. There's no reason why it wouldn't work here. And I just hope we start seeing better compliance. I'm glad the numbers are coming down. That's a good, positive thing. Nobody likes the restrictions. I understand that. But I think some reaction had to be made. I'm very disappointed with the lack of activity out of the Assembly and out of the State Senate. This would be an all-hands-on-deck situation. This is unprecedented. Never in my lifetime have we had a public health crisis this severe. And going hand-in-hand with that, we have the economic crisis. We have so many people out of work, so many people that are struggling and having a hard time getting by. And I think the legislature has kind of abdicated its responsibility. And the only time they surface is to say no or try to say no to whatever Governor Evers is trying to do. So I'm disappointed in it. I think if they were all down there working together, we would be in better shape and we would have less divisiveness.
So the pandemic has resulted in unprecedented economic challenges as well. Lost revenue that will have a significant impact on the state's budget. And the latest projections show the revenue shortfall will have some serious implications on state aid for schools and for infrastructure. So if elected, how do you propose to deal with the projected state budget shortfall?
There is no simple answer to that. There really isn't. Unlike the federal government, the state government doesn't have the ability to go into deficit spending. And we're in a hole. We're going to be in a big hole. We're going to have to prioritize. We're going to have to prioritize people's needs first. It's too complex of an answer, a question to have a pat answer for. And anybody who gives you one, I think, is deemed misleading or simplistic. We're going to have to look. First, we're going to have to know what the numbers are. We're going to have to look at what the priorities are, what we can afford to keep funding, at what levels. And all of that is unknown at this time, unfortunately.
But sure, and you talked about the way that individuals have been impacted by this. Small businesses and farmers have been especially hard hit by the pandemic as well. And how can the state best help those struggling to recover, like those small businesses and farmers?
Right. I could agree with you more on that. And unfortunately, the initial... I believe it was the CARES Act that was passed. Unfortunately, most of the money was siphoned off by big business, Wall Street, and wealthy individuals, and didn't make its way to individual business owners, small business owners who are the backbone of our state economy, and farmers who are not only the backbone of our economy, but the identity of our state. And that has a ripple effect. We're seeing lots of small businesses that are struggling to make it and may not. So we need to invest in them. That needs to be a priority. I don't want to see any big investments in General Electric or any other multinational company. They're going to be just fine.
Speaking of priorities, if you had to say what your top two priorities are in Madison, what would those be, your top two priorities?
Well, I think the first thing that would have a tremendous impact on a large number of Wisconsinites is let's accept the expanded Medicaid money so we can expand Badger Care. It is a no-brainer. When somebody offers you $250 million a year and you can provide health care for access to health care for 80,000 plus Wisconsinites, you say yes. You don't say no because of some ideological reason. There is no logical reason not to accept that money. And then that money also gets spent in the economy and makes our right now, our beleaguered healthcare providers, you know, the nurses, the doctors, the hospitals, the clinics, it injects more money into them and makes them more solvent and more effective. So that would be number one. Number two, it's hard to limit it to two, Shereen. It really is. Because there are so many, I think in order to really move forward, we need to get politics out of redistricting. We need to have fair maps. And I am advocating that no elected politician should have any say in how the districts are drawn. It just runs counter to fairness. It runs counter to accountability. If you can rig the system to the point where you can get 200,000 less votes statewide and get 46% of the vote, yet end up with 63% of the seats. That's just not the American way I grew up learning about. But if we fix that, we will have more responsive government. But there are tremendous issues beyond that. We need to fix our roads. We need to provide affordable broadband access to every resident of Wisconsin. That has been really at the forefront with the pandemic, because we have a lot of folks who live out in the townships that don't have access to broadband. Heck, some of them don't have access to cell phones and can't even get a landline. So these are all issues we need to address.
Sure. Jeff, in 2016, the rural areas of Wisconsin voted overwhelmingly for Donald Trump. In the same election, medium to large metropolitan areas went decisively the other way. So how would you propose to address the concerns of voters in both areas without disenfranchising either one?
When I talk to people, Shereen, I came to the conclusion that we all pretty much want the same thing. We really do. We want to be able to make a decent living so we can take care of our families. We want to provide good schooling for our kids. We want a good school system. We want good roads to drive on so we're not messing up our car and we don't have to worry about that. You know, we want clean air and water, and we want a good opportunity for our children going forward. We want to be able to, if they want, to stay here and work and make a good living. We all want these same things. It's just a matter of how we get there. So the question I always pose to voters is, do you think we're closer to getting those things, or do you think we're farther away?
You know,
and I mentioned broadband earlier. I mean, it's a huge issue for the townships. And I live in the city of Wausau. It's important to me. If it affects any, you know, I have fine access. It doesn't matter. And until we all have access, we're not on an equal footing. And a level playing field. And I don't consider people that live outside the city any different than myself. They have different needs in areas. They have wells instead of city water and sewer. They have septics.
Sure. Just a few seconds left, Jeff. Is there anything that we haven't brought up that you'd like to discuss that your campaign is focusing on, just very briefly?
Well, very, very briefly, one of the things that I think would go a long way to kind of smoothing things out when election time comes around, is right now we don't have any constitutional right to vote. Not in the federal constitution, nor in the state one, does it explicitly state that citizens, you know, adult citizens have a right to vote. It's not in there. It's alluded to. I think we need that. We need it explicitly spelled out so we don't run into any shenanigans in the future. So every eligible voter is able to cast a ballot. I think that's something we need. I don't think anybody could be opposed to having Americans that are eligible to vote voting.
All right. Thank you. You're listening to Special Election Coverage with Jeff Johnson, a Democrat who is challenging Republican Pat Snyder for Wisconsin's 85th Assembly seat. Pat Snyder is the incumbent who is currently representing the district. Mr. Johnson, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you, Shane.
That's all we have time for today on Route 51. I'm Shereen Seward. I'd like to thank our guests, Republican Patrick Teston and Democrat Paul Petrusky, candidates for Wisconsin's 24th Senate District, and Democrat Jeff Johnson and incumbent Republican Pat Snyder, candidates for Wisconsin's 85th Assembly District. Our producer is Joy Ratchkramer. Our executive producer is Rick Ryer, who is also our on-air producer today. Special thanks to John Altenberg for the Route 51 theme. You can hear the archive of today's program and our previous candidate conversations at WPR.org/Route 51. Next week, we'll hear from candidates in Wisconsin's 12th Senate and 69th Assembly District as we continue our election coverage. We hope you join us. Until then, we're heading out of town.